You are listening to National Security Law Today.
Welcome to National Security Law Today, the podcast of the ABA's Standing Committee on Law and National Security. I'm Elisa Poteet. We're glad you're here. We've had a brief pause in our series on sci-fi as a cautionary tale for national security. We're going to start with Russia, where there has been a massive attack on Ukraine. Ukraine is now sending inmates to the front lines, if you can imagine, which is what Russia was doing some time ago. According to maps that are published in a number of European journals right now that purport to show geolocation information of Russian forces, it now appears that Russia controls 18% of Ukraine. This is a terrible development, quite obviously. So at the same time, Putin has fired his defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, and he's now replaced him, interestingly enough, with a technocrat who has no battle experience and no history of working in this area. That may strongly suggest that Putin is now trying to take control of the situation himself. At the same time, European intelligence agencies are warning their governments that Russia is planning violent attacks of sabotage across the continent, which are intended to disrupt critical infrastructure. This follows the charging of two men in the UK in April with starting a fire in a warehouse that contained shipments bound for Ukraine. Sweden has been investigating railway derailments they believe are caused by Russian actors, and the Czech Republic is investigating railway interference by Russia. This time, they're looking at apparent efforts by Russia to sabotage the signaling system of the railways. Last week, we noticed a serious uptick in malign activities against NATO by Russia. But Poland's foreign minister, Radoslaw Sikorski, thinks Putin has miscalculated and possibly overplayed his hand. Why does he feel this way? Because the EU has voted to use Russian money that it finds in country, an estimated 3 billion euro, to help fund the war effort against Russia. The Kremlin has used Europe, as you know, as basically a laundromat for filthy lucre for 2.5 decades now, at least. When Russia thought it was winning, Sikorsky noticed, it realized it had pushed multiple new countries along its border to join NATO. And now the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times report Russia's trade with longtime partners Turkey and China has fallen because of the efficacy of a particular executive order that prevents foreign financial institutions from accessing the U.S. banking system if they facilitate significant transactions relating to Russia's military industrial base. Moving on in the news, the realities of our competition with China are emerging in cyberspace, space-based, and computing. A team at UMass Amherst reports they've made a major advancement in the race to establish quantum computing. Quantum computing is a system that uses quantum mechanics so that it can solve extremely complex problems, and it uses multiple layers of algorithms in ways that supercomputers just can't. The UMass team says it developed a microwave circulator that will allow them, the team members, to precisely tune the exact degree of non-repository between a qubit and a microwave resonant cavity. Are you already lost? No worries. The bottom line is a U.S. team has developed a thing you need to do quantum computing. And right now, the Chinese and the Russians are probably trying to figure out how to get their hands on it. So where else are we showing American excellence in the technological competition with China? Well, several places. The National Geospatial Intelligence Agency is now injecting machine learning and computer vision across its operations, which will drastically heighten its game when it comes to helping military leaders see what is happening on the battlefield. This matters in any future conflict and will need legal experts to advise on. And apparently, a DoD official told Space News that the race to operationalize AI is critical to the competition with China because, this is a quote, the Chinese see this as a race to be the first to weaponize AI. Winning a war hinges on the quality and accuracy of the data. How can we compete, you ask, if we don't fix our power grid? Well, that's a good question, because data centers, AI computing, and quantum are all going to require a lot of energy. The need for a power system that can sustain and support the new realities is now bumping up against the ambitions of those who oppose nuclear power. And this conflict is playing out right now in the state of Georgia, the state that is, not the republic. Maybe worth watching. Speaking of data, where is yours going? Well, next week, we're going to talk about the national security reasons that underpin the recent executive order banning the bulk transfer of Americans' personal data to countries of concern. And we're going to discuss basically why this EO was ever framed and pushed out. Now, why do we care about this stuff in national security? You may wonder, but you can deduce that from the remarks of Dr. Liz Sherwood Randall, the assistant to the president for Homeland Security on countering bioterrorism in an era of technological convergence. How would you like that to be your title? This is what she said. The convergence of advanced computing, AI, and biotechnology may well have as great an impact on our society as the Industrial Revolution and the digital revolution. Some of the same technological advances, though, create novel risks. She went on to discuss bio threats that will become more dangerous when they are based on information from DNA sequencing that will increase the potential deadly impact of new pathogens, including new diseases. And for national security lawyers, there is an executive order from 2022 on advancing biotechnology and biomanufacturing. A critical part of the AO is the strengthening of supply chains so America can retain its place as the leading biotechnology nation and not cede that role to China, which has ambitions in that direction. Among the data she noted needed protection, and this gets into bulk data, is DNA information. Yep, that's the stuff that you keep turning over to 23andMe, never knowing where it could end up if that company fails or is acquired or somehow liquidates its assets. Among its assets would be your DNA. Now, before we close out, let me remind listeners that we needed action by an EO because Congress still has not passed a comprehensive data privacy law. It's now been 4 years since Vice found several states were selling Department of Motor Vehicle database, like the entire database, including your information. What did they get in exchange for that? Well, Florida amassed $77 million. California got $72 or $52 million for the sale. And who bought that data? Do we know? If you live in Delaware, Florida, California, Rhode Island, Indiana, New Jersey, or Vermont, which is about to pass its own, or did just pass its own state data privacy law without even a shred of irony, or Wisconsin, your DMV data is gone. And who got it, and who can that person sell it to? While members of Congress at the time spoke out about this alarming trend among states, we still don't have any new legislation. So we'll get back to this EO next week because it's something we want to dive into even deeper than we have in previous podcasts. So thanks so much for listening to NSLT. Be sure to hit that subscribe button on your app of choice. And if you like our content, give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to share this episode with a friend and to discuss any of the news topics we've covered in a thoughtful way, hearing other people's opinions and arguments, because it will improve your skills as a lawyer. It will make you consider other issues and develop your own thoughts. And remember, a key feature of our national security is our unity in a country more diverse than any other in all aspects, including our thoughts. Our producer and writer is me, Elisa Poteet. I'm always here in my individual capacity. Our editor and my co-producer is Francis Burkham. My other co-producer is the amazing, ever amazing Holly McMahon, along with all the members of the Standing Committee on Law and National Security, without whom this podcast would not be possible. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed on National Security Law Today have not been approved by the House of Delegates or the Board of Governors of the American Bar Association, and this recording should not be construed as representing ABA policy.